Good afternoon, good evening, good morning, global tribe of committed disruptors, disruptors everywhere. This is Coach Nick and the Dudes of Disruption, disrupting your automatics. Today's show, Tech Break or Break from Tech. We are live every Sunday on WHCR, WHCR.org. 90.3 FM. We are the voice of Harlem. You can also catch me live on my Facebook page at Nick Papadopoulos. Happy Sunday, you disruptors, and start to a new week. You are listening again to Coach Nick and the Dudes of Disruption. I am Coach Nick, author, speaker, facilitator around transformational and leadership topics, and a committed disruptor like you. Why we're here? To awaken humanity so everyone gets to leave their mark. I deliver transformation and disruption in the areas of leadership development, corporate culture, team dynamics, and personal development. And Coach Nick and the Dudes of Disruption have a men's group here in New York City. If you want more information about our men's group, email me at coachnick@coachnick.com. I also have and run a social action group here in the city. If you want to get involved in politics and get on the court and make a difference, email me at coachnick@coachnick.com. We have an event coming up on March 20th here in the city. Today's show, Tech Break. Global Tribe of Disruptors, do you find it impossible to ignore your text when you feel the buzz on your phone? Or the email when you see that there's a new message in your inbox that's bolded. You know that bold that you get when you get a new message. Or when you see the number of new likes on your Facebook page. We start the show first segment with opening thoughts and Nick's riff. The second segment, we have a Say What, which is an article that supports our topic. In the third segment, we have an Ask a Dudette. We have Dr. Jessica Koblenz calling in. Although Dr. Jessica Koblenz is going to be hopping in on the second segment and third segment, a little bonus round. And then fourth segment, we have parting shots. Please call in at 212-650-6903. Send in your online comments. And we start every show with Nick's riff.
I know that, dude.
All right, we start every show with Nick's riff, which includes a quote to set a context. This quote comes from Moby, an American DJ, singer, songwriter, musician, photographer, and animal rights activist. Moby says, "What fascinates me about addiction and obsessive behavior is that people would choose an altered state of feel okay." Help to set a context for our show. Global Tribe of Disruptors, do you ever feel like you are addicted to Facebook, to your email, to your phone, to technology, to Instagram, to Twitter, to texting? Do you find it impossible to ignore your text message when you're having dinner or lunch with a friend or a colleague? When you're in a conference call at work, do you find it hard to stay away from the new messages that are coming in that are popping up on your email inbox? Do you get upset when you post a picture on Instagram or on Facebook and you get less likes and less comments than some of your friends? Does it actually impact you? Does it actually hurt your feelings? What would be possible if you could actually focus differently, if you could focus and eliminate those distractions? What would be possible that instead of connecting with people by typing messages, you could actually connect face-to-face and have a verbal live conversation? The opportunity lies in disrupting what I would consider to be the culprit, okay? It could be the culprit at times, and sometimes it can also be your friend. And the culprit and friend can be what I'm going to refer to in science, is dopamine. Dopamine, which is created in various parts of the brain, and it's critical in all sorts of brain functions, including thinking, moving, sleeping, mood, attention, motivation, seeking, and reward. Dopamine controls the pleasure systems and centers of the brain. Dopamine makes you feel enjoyment, pleasure, and therefore motivates you to seek out certain behaviors such as food, sex, and drugs, which all obviously can become addictive and obsessive when we focus on doing them over and over and over again. With social media and technology such as texting, right? Some of you are listening to this show and you're texting at the same time. So with social media and technology such as texting or emailing or swiping right if you're on a dating app, your instant gratification of your desire to seek out pleasure is happening all the time. With social media and technology, if you want to talk to someone right away, you get to talk to them right away. With technology and social media, if you want to order something online right away, like a movie or an item, you get to do it. Instant gratification. Want to send a text and get a response within seconds? Instant gratification. Want to look up some information on the internet about Coach Nick and the Dudes of Disruption? You can do that. Instant gratification. Just type your request into Google and you'll get anything you want, and then some. Want to see what your friends are up to on Instagram? Instant gratification. Just go to the app. It's easy to get in a dopamine-induced loop. It's easy to get obsessive and addictive around this dopamine loop. Dopamine starts when you are seeking. Then you get rewarded for the seeking, which makes you seek even more, right? Get it? It becomes harder and harder to stop looking at email, to stop texting, or stop checking your cell phone, even when you're in the middle of a dinner or a business meeting with someone. And what actually starts to get harder is the ability to actually connect with people face-to-face or even in a live phone call. What I mean by that is, as we get more and more addicted to technology and to social media, and that becomes the way that we believe is the most effective way to interact and relate, actually having conversations, talking to people, becomes harder for us. It becomes actually foreign. So this show is not about eliminating social media and technology. It's quite the opposite. In fact, what we're saying is use social media, use technology to support you in enhancing relationships, to support you during the in-between times when you haven't seen someone for a while or you haven't connected with them for a while. Use social media and technology to help enhance and expand your network, to deepen relationships. And at the same time, the disruption here is to continue to use face-to-face interaction, to use the phone, to use live interaction as a way to build trust, as a way to build deeper connections. One of the things that Brené Brown talks about. Brené Brown is an expert speaker, TEDx speaker, and she concluded one of the things that all humans want is connection. That's how we're wired, and in order to be connected and to have a sense of belonging, vulnerability is a major access point to this belonging. And so what I want to emphasize is, again, that social media and technology allow you to connect with people in a different way. Yet when we rely on that as the only way, when I talk to folks, when I'm coaching people in business, for example, they'll say to me, oh, I had a conversation with somebody. And I'll say, okay, what did they actually say? What was their body language like? What were some of the examples they were sharing? Well, I had the conversation over instant messenger, or I had it over text message. That is not a conversation. That is not a way to build trust. That is not a way to create a deeper, richer connection with that person. I want to share with you a quick audio clip from Simon Sinek, who also talks about our obsession with social media and technology and how it may be getting in our way in moving relationships forward and feeling a sense of fulfillment.
The generation that we call the millennials, they were told that they were special all the time. They were told that they could have anything they want in life just because they want it. So you take this group and they graduate school and they get a job. They find out they're not special. Their moms can't get them a promotion. And by the way, you can't just have it because you want it. And in an instant, their entire self-image is shattered. And so you have an entire generation that's growing up with lower self-esteem than previous generations. We're growing up in a Facebook, Instagram world. In other words, we're good at putting filters on things. We're good at showing people that life is amazing even though I'm depressed. Now, let's add in technology. Engagement with social media and our cell phones releases a chemical called dopamine. That's why when you get a text, feels good. It's why we count the likes. It's because we know when you get it, you get a hit of dopamine, which feels good. Dopamine is the exact same chemical that makes us feel good when we smoke, when we drink. In other words, it's highly, highly addictive. Too many kids don't know how to form deep, meaningful relationships. They will admit that many of their friendships are superficial, that they don't count on their friends. They have fun with their friends, but they also know that their friends will cancel them.
That was That was Simon Sinek. And what Simon Sinek talks about in that particular talk is he talks about how you have to be a certain age to smoke. You have to be a certain age to drink and buy alcohol. You have to be a certain age to gamble. You have to be a certain age to drive large machinery like an automobile. Yet with social media, you have kids starting in the single digits. You have kids at age 7, 8, 9, 10. You have kids, you have teenagers, you have young adults, you have professionals who are on social media in this very obsessive way, which again can get in the way of our fulfillment, can get in the way of our of enriching relationships. Let me say this before we go to break. For me, addiction to social media is about looking around in our lives where we're making certain choices and taking certain actions to disconnect. Not as a make wrong, rather as a notice, right? Where are we distracting or getting in our own way from moving forward in any area of our lives, which could be in business or at home with our partner or with ourselves in our health or the way we manage our finances? How do we use this addiction and obsession to social media to get in our way? It's to look at where we're causing drama so we can keep ourselves small and in the same place in any one of those areas. Those choices and actions that we make around social media and around technology eventually become an automatic way in which we operate, and we eventually become numb to and just keep doing the same thing over and over again, where it now becomes something very normal. And the road back to awareness becomes less and less clear. It becomes actually quite foggy. So before we go to break, the question I want to offer to the global tribe of disruptors who are watching and listening, and thank you again for spending Sunday with us, what are you avoiding in your life by using social media? More when we come back from today's show, Tech Break. Your phone calls, 212-650-6903. When we come back, we're going to do Say What and bring in Dr. Jessica Koblenz. All right, you're listening to Coach Nick and the Dudes of Disruption, disrupting your automatics, your automatic way of being, your automatic way of doing, your automatic way of thinking. We have special guest Dr. Jessica Koblenz joining us in a moment. This week, Break from Tech. Couple of online comments here from our friend. We have a global tribe here. Our friend Marie Picard shouting out, saying hi there to Nick and the team. Brother James, who's part of our men's group, he just said here, was just having this conversation with the lady right before tuning in. So true. Again, what we're talking about is our relationship to technology and social media and how it's impacting our level of happiness, our level of fulfillment, and our opportunity to enrich relationships. And a shout out from an old friend, Loida Rivera. Hi there. Thanks for joining the show. That song was called Dopamine. How appropriate, since we've been talking about dopamine in the first segment, by Third Eyed Blonde. The lead singer is trying to figure out if his feelings are actually real or just a change in brain chemistry. In an interview, he explained, dopamine is almost like becoming addicted to the feeling and not necessarily attaching it to a single person and not allowing your emotions to be hustled. I want to welcome in Dr. Jessica Koblenz, who's a licensed clinical psychologist in the state of New York. She's a faculty member of Harlem Hospital. And what I love most is she is passionate about helping and supporting her clients achieve his or her potential. Hello, Jessica.
Hi, thank you so much for having me.
Yes. How's your Sunday so far?
It's great. It's
awesome.
Going well.
Awesome, awesome. So
how
we're doing
yours?
My Sunday's pretty good. I'm on we're on live FM WHCR, WHCR.org, the voice of Harlem. So all is good, mm-hmm. Jessica. So in this second segment, Jessica, we talk about an article. We call this the Say What section, where we bring in an article, a book, a video, an audio, whatever it may be, to support our conversation. So this is an article from Forbes magazine. It's written by a gentleman named Amit Chaudhry. And he talks about heavy Facebook and social media usage leads to depression. Have you heard that before? That finding, that type of sentiment?
Yeah, I mean, it's not surprising because there's a lot of overlap between symptoms of depression, including social isolation and you know, being home more, and I think it really naturally lends to using social media more as
yes.
opposed to being out there.
Yep. Well, the article, this Forbes article by Amit Chaudhry, talks about some researchers at the University of Pittsburgh School of Medicine. They recently conducted a study about the effects of social media habits on the moods of users. So I'm going to read some excerpts from the article. The research determined that more time that people spend on social media, the more likely you are to be depressed, which is interesting because I think if you ask most people why they're on social media or why they join everything from YouTube to Twitter to Instagram to Snapchat to Facebook to LinkedIn, etc., right? They would say, well, it's to actually enhance my relationships. It's to actually feel connected. And so this study is actually saying quite the opposite. According to this particular study that the University of Pittsburgh School of Medicine did, they found that participants used social media 61 minutes per day and visited various social media accounts 30 times per week on average. What made the study alarming was that more than a quarter of the participants were classified as having high indicators of depression. There were significant and linear associations between social media usage and depression, whether social media was measured based on total time spent or frequency. The article goes on to say, compared against users that viewed social media less frequently, participants that use social media very frequently have 2.7 times the likelihood of depression. And compared to people that spend less time, participants that spend the most total time on social media throughout the day had 1.7 times the risk of depression. When you're working with clients or working with teams, does this conversation come up, Jessica?
Yeah, it definitely does. I mean, I think what's interesting about the study also is that, you know, correlational studies are interesting because correlation doesn't prove causation.
Okay.
So what that means is that it doesn't necessarily mean that, you know, using the social media will definitely make someone depressed, but
right.
you kind of look for overlap.
Right.
So if somebody's spending copious amounts of time at home, they're on the computer, you know, then there might be other things going on. So I think, you know, for my clients, the clients who are most susceptible to depression are ones who, if there's nothing else going on, and, you know, they're involved with social media and there's something negative that comes up, the way that that hits someone could be a lot harder than somebody else who might have, you know, a really big social circle and like maybe something happens on social media, but they're able to put it in a different context because
yes.
they're getting that balance.
That's great.
I think, you know, looking at what else is in someone's life makes a big difference in that way.
Yeah, the article goes on just to build on what you're saying, Jessica, and to ride your coattails a bit about what causes depression in relation to heavy social media usage. So the article talks about, here's some of the reasons why it happens, right? There's exposure to highly idealized representations of peers and friends on social media, which elicits feelings of envy and the distorted belief that others lead happier, more successful lives. I played a clip from Simon Sinek during the first segment, and he talks about in this talk that he does around social media and technology and our obsession about it is that we go on social media and we think everybody else is doing amazing, right? And you start to compare yourself with other people. And often when you get into a place of where you're comparing yourself to others, you are judging yourself. And you also start to judge others, which I think ultimately causes separation, right? Which again,
mm-hmm.
which is quite the opposite of what you're wanting to accomplish when you're on Facebook or on any social media platform.
Yeah, and I think that there's also the lack of vulnerability. So it's not just that you're seeing somebody at their highest point when everything is great, but there's also this real disconnect between, you know, part of what makes us feel really close to other people is when you can really let your guard down
yes.
and be vulnerable about the thing you're struggling with the most.
Yes.
And even the way that that comes across in social media can sometimes be in a really highly dramatized way. You know, there's a social media, someone who had an eating disorder and they were, you know, being very public about it. And for some people, that could be really helpful because it's allowing them to break the silence from something that they're struggling with. But, you know, to get notoriety, and they're using it in a certain way that's not about being vulnerable.
Yeah, and
so it's kind of interesting.
Yeah,
it could have a transformative effect, but
yeah,
you know,
I love that
can also lead to more connection.
I love that you brought up vulnerability because, again, in the first segment, I also brought up Brené Brown, who's an expert on vulnerability.
Mm-hmm.
She does TEDx talks on vulnerability, and one of the things she talks about is the access point to vulnerability is connection, and that what she concluded in her studies is that all human beings want to be connected, and so yes, you can get connected via social media, Facebook, Instagram, Snapchat, LinkedIn, etc., all great vehicles. And at the same time, what's really critical in connection is the face-to-face interaction, is the phone calls. It's being with people, like you said, where when you're with people, you're able to share differently. You're able to feel someone's energy. You can actually see their expressions. You can see their body language. You can actually see when something is actually really, really important to them. We have a couple of online comments that I want to read here that I think are important to our conversation, Jessica. We have Jim Hill, who's another member of our men's group here in New York City, and he's often a participant in our Dudes of Disruption radio show. He says, any activity where you dedicate too much time and end up disappearing, quote unquote, can be a sign of depression. Addiction can show up in many ways, including exercise, you name it. And Brother James, who's part of our men's group and has been commenting, he said the paradigm is that while you put something out there for the world, which someone feeling low or angry wants attention, the resulting attention is scattered and with the agenda to lament or soapbox, which becomes actually a vicious cycle, almost like a paradox. Let me just share a couple of more points from this article. Thank you for the online comments, everybody. I love it. Obviously, this is a hot topic. Let me just share a couple of more points, Jessica, that the article shares as to why the relationship between high social media usage and depression can happen. It says here, people that engage in activities of little meaning on social media makes them feel like they're wasting time. I know that I spend a lot of time on social media, and I know that after I've been on there for an hour or two, I get mad at myself. I get angry at myself. And, you know, that disempowering self-talk, the little voices in my head will start saying, why did you just waste 60 minutes or 2 hours or whatever it may be when you could have been doing something more productive, like being connected to your kids who are in the other room, let's say, or, you know, doing some work that's going to enhance your radio show or your career or enhance your relationship with your girlfriend. A couple of other things that the article says, spending more time on social media sometimes can increase the exposure to cyberbullying. I mean, I think that's definitely happening around politics, regardless of what side you're on, regardless of what your belief may be. There's lots of cyberbullying going on around, you know, people posting their thoughts, articles around politics, which, again, when you're getting attacked on Facebook, for example, because you have a certain belief politically, that causes feelings of depression as well.
Yeah. I think it's interesting also when people go into social media with very different expectations from what happens when they come out. I think that for all of us, you know, we go on thinking that we're going to relax, thinking we're going to, you know, be exposed to something pleasurable. And now social media has really changed. And so people are having very different experiences than they ever have before.
Right.
And so something that might have been refueling or something that allowed somebody to kind of tune out for a moment, because even though being mindful is wonderful and to be present is wonderful, it's also okay to have occasional moments of being mindless or tuning out.
Right.
But now the expectation is so different from the feelings of being upset or disempowered or angry or depressed. So I think it's really good to check in with yourself, if you know, to notice if you keep telling yourself you're going in expecting one emotion and then a different one comes up.
Yeah, that happens to me constantly. I'm glad you just said that, Jessica.
Yeah, for all
I go
of us,
in
yeah.
I go in to just, you know, zone out for a few minutes, for example, on Facebook in particular for me. And which is fine, which again I think is normal. You know, people come home from work traditionally and might want to veg out a little bit for a few minutes and put the TV on. I think that's fine. I mean, doing anything in moderation can be okay. It's when we start to you know, cross that line of moderation. And for everybody, moderation is obviously, or crossing that line of moderation is different. But I know that I go on Facebook just to check out for a few minutes, and then all of a sudden somebody's posting something on a friend's page around politics, let's say specifically around politics right now, and all of a sudden I'm allowing myself to get lured in, and now I'm having a Facebook war with somebody, and again, I'm not listening to them. They're not listening to me. And what was supposed to be, like you said, this feeling of relaxation and just checking out. Now I'm in an all-out war, and now I'm texting my girlfriend and I'm saying, can you believe this person just said this? And now I'm messaging another person on Facebook and saying, can you believe your friend is saying that? And now the dopamine has been released, right? The dopamine has been released, and now I'm in that dopamine loop that I mentioned in the first segment. And I want to just say one more thing about the dopamine system before we go to break, which is the dopamine system is most powerfully stimulated when the information coming in is small. And that's another reason why I actually think it doesn't satisfy people a lot, and why they get addicted for even more. I think text messaging, for example, or when you're tweeting, Twitter, right, can only be 140 characters, is ideally suited to send your dopamine system raging. I mean, raging, because, hey, I want more. I'm not satisfied more, right? You just like any addict addicted to anything, you want more. So 140 characters just doesn't do it for me. A text message with LOLs and LMAOs and, you know, and all these abbreviations just doesn't do it after a while. And so you're wanting more and more. Jessica, I know you're going to stay on for the third segment. I've got a bunch of questions I want to ask you. You're a licensed psychologist, so I'm really looking forward to that. Again, we have a podcast. The Dudes of Disruption have a podcast that drops Monday or Tuesday of every week. Right now, we're number six. Thank you so much for listening and commenting and downloading and sharing. The Dudes of Disruption have a podcast on Podomatic and on iTunes. It'll drop early this week. Coming up, we have Dr. Jessica Koblenz staying on with us. Please call in at 212-650-6903. Keep sending in your online comments. All right, you're listening to Coach Nick and the Dudes of Disruption, disrupting your automatics, your automatic way of being, your automatic way of doing, your automatic way of thinking. Today's show is called Tech Break. Please check us out. Check out the Dudes of Disruption on Facebook. Like us there on Instagram, like us on Twitter. I mean, since we're talking about social media, I might as well plug our social media. The question of the show, Jessica, and for the disruptors out there, is what are you avoiding in your life by using social media, by crossing that line of moderation? What was once supposed to be relaxation, what was once supposed to be a way to connect with people, mm-hmm. how are you using social media to avoid something in your life? Not as a make wrong, rather as an opportunity to notice. That song was Jane Says by Jane's Addiction. How appropriate. And for me at this time, the lines about Jane in the song getting mad and taking a swing, but quote unquote, she can't hit, I believe are about anger that surges in folks who victims for that matter, that they can't actually place where that anger is coming from, where that discomfort is coming from, right? There's this uncomfortableness that people often feel. We can't really tell. So they can't hit or find the cause of it. And then what happens is we act out in other ways because of this blind spot. Just a couple of online comments, Jessica. We have my girlfriend, Anissa, who's always a fan favorite on our show. She says the importance of having real conversations is important because you want to have real conversations with people you care about in real time rather than sending emails and then waiting for responses 3 days later or sending text messages and waiting, you know, it's later in the day. It's like, again, the way to build relationships and the way to get to the nuances of a relationship is to have them live in person without the phone in your hand, actually. We've got one of our other fan favorites, Madeline Martinez. Good afternoon, Nick and the crew. We've got all the disruptors out there, Jessica, tuning in for you. So I've got a bunch of questions here for you. So we have Dr. Jessica Koblenz calling in. She's a licensed psychologist here in New York State, resident of New York City. How have you noticed your social media experience since the election, during the election, and obviously post-election? How would you categorize, what have you noticed about it?
Well, I think what's happening for everybody is that, you know, we were talking a little bit about how the expectations of social media have changed. And, you know, to your point earlier, you were talking about, like, how fights might be more likely to occur on social media.
Right.
And I think the reason why that occurs is that there's so much more polarization from both sides. And, you know, there were these studies that came out that found that Facebook feeds, you know, there's a blue feed, there's a red feed, and that people are kind of stuck in these bubbles. I think it's easier, you know, there's different cognitive distortions, like these stinking thinking traps that we get into that really serve to isolate us from relationships.
Okay.
And one of them is like black or white thinking. And this idea that, you know, whatever side you're on, that the other person is, you know, on this opposing side. And there's something very unique about social media and being able to dehumanize that experience. So instead of having an actual conversation about the content, like the example that you were talking about, where we get totally swept up and before
right.
we know it, we're on this thread, is that we're not really seeing the full human. We don't have the eye contact. This is also why
right.
we're more likely to fight with our partners, you know, in the car, because there's so many signals and cues that we're missing. But I think that, you know, even though we're talking a lot about the negatives of social media, it's also important to look at the ways that it could potentially bond.
Right.
You know, that it was kind of beautiful. You just shared that your girlfriend called in or had that, like, online live experience.
Correct.
And there's no way we could do that without social media.
Exactly, exactly. You know, it's interesting. I have a friend of mine who we were texting back and forth about something that was going on in politics, which obviously seems to be happening all the time, right? And we're texting back and forth with each other, and we're literally getting angry at each other. And to the point where he said to me, I don't think we should ever talk about politics again. I think we're done. I think we should never talk about it again. We should talk about everything else except for politics. And this is all over text messaging. I would probably say
right.
that between him and I, we probably sent about 12 text messages back and forth, which resulted in a separation rather than a connection and bringing us closer together, which I think was the purpose of social media and technology in the first place. At least I would think
right.
that was part of it. And let me just say this. What happened, Jessica, was interesting, is the minute I saw that happen, the minute I saw him say, we're done, we shouldn't ever talk about politics again, I picked up the phone and I called him and I said, hey, let's take a time out here. Let's take a step back here. Let's continue to have dialogue around politics, because let's lead by example in our country. Instead of building a blue wall or a red wall or an I don't care wall, whatever the case may be, right? Let's continue to come together. And we had this conversation, and we actually came to realize that, hey, we're actually a lot closer than we think. We're actually more aligned than we think. And that was not possible over text message. That was only possible in a live phone conversation in this case.
Right. And I wonder what was different. You know, is it the tone of voice that you hear? Is it that you hear that some, you know, you're able to pick up on the emotions of what someone's experiencing? This
yes.
is a big part of private practice, that people come in, there's a fight that happens, and it's exactly like you described. And somebody says, yeah, I was having a conversation with, you know, this guy that I'm dating or whatever. And then you break it down, and you're like, oh, this was all over text message. No wonder why they weren't picking up on those cues. Earlier, you asked the question, what are we avoiding by having these, by getting lost in this
yes.
distraction? And I think something that's really powerful is, I was talking to a colleague who is a psychologist and said, you know, her private practice is largely filled with clients who have an opposite political opinion than her own.
Right.
And I said, how are you dealing with that? Like, that must be really challenging. And, you know, what do you do? And she said, oh, I don't think about the content. I just think about the emotion. And it was illuminating to me, because it's not really about the stuff. Sometimes it is about the content, about, you know, what's really making us fired up. But it's really the emotion that's getting triggered in us.
Right.
The fact that we feel angry, the fact that people feel afraid, that they feel powerless, you know, whatever the feeling is. And I think that's really the point of being able to, you know, when we think about what we're avoiding,
right.
I think if everybody was able to just check in with themselves about what is that emotion that's driving this,
yeah.
we'd be able to not have such polarizing social media experiences.
Yeah, somebody, Jessica, one of my great friends, Curtis Dennis, who is a disruptor, and he's been committed to transformational work for many, many years. He made an interesting comment, which is online, which is, he says, it wasn't that you were talking about politics. He's referring to the example I shared earlier with my friend. It's that you wanted to be right about your politics. You wanted to persuade him that you were right, and he wanted to persuade you that he was right, right? And so So we're using often in that example that I share with my friend going back and forth on text messaging, rather than being committed to the relationship and being committed to connection, we were committed to being right. And often we're committed to being right even at the expense of, or even at the cost of, the relationship. And so I was able to, especially since I have a show called Disruption, right, and Disrupting Your Automatics, I disrupted that automatic of wanting to be right, and instead being right about having a deep, meaningful relationship and connection with this person.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's really powerful when you're able to refocus in that way. There's I have a gym buddy who has polar opposite belief in politics than I do, and something that's been kind of strong throughout this experience is for us to realize that the friendship can still be maintained despite what we think. And it's funny because sometimes we'll be working out together and then like we'll talk about politics and we get really fired up, and then it's like coming out in our working out and everything.
Right.
And I guess it's kind of helpful to have a little medium in order to address it. But
exactly.
But I guess sometimes when we perceive being able to have a connection despite someone who's so different from us,
right,
that's such an opportunity to look at ourselves and say, you know, what is being triggered here? And how do I overcome that?
Let me ask you this question. In the first segment, I mentioned that I believe that we often use, and I will, you know, takes one to know one. I put myself on the hot seat first and foremost. How do you know if you're using social media to distract from more important things? Let me just give you, before you answer the question, let me give some statistics out there, right? Teenagers are on social media on average 3 hours a day. Millennials are on social media 2 hours a day. 28% of Twitter users check their feed before getting up in the AM. Listen, I'm one of them. I check Twitter and I check Facebook before getting out of bed, instead of, for example, meditating, instead of kissing my girlfriend hello and good morning, instead of actually stretching, right? Things that you would say are healthy, things that would connect me to another human or even connect me to myself, right? 28% of Twitter users check their feed before getting up in the AM. Americans spend 25% of their workday browsing the internet on non-work-related activities. That's unbelievable. So let me go back to my question. How do you know if you're using social media to distract from more important things, like building relationship and bridges with your clients, with your significant other, with your kids?
So I think on a fundamental, you know, just ground floor level, looking at, are you not getting certain obligations met?
Right.
So are you not getting your work done? Is there something that, you know, is it functionally impairing you where you realize, you know, you're ending up being 5 minutes, late to work every day, or something's happening where, you know, you're at work and because you're so distracted, you're missing some important elements.
Right.
So I think in terms of like how crucial, I think that speaks to a different kind of level in terms of addiction and how harmful it could be. Another way of thinking about it is to look to be able to check in with yourself about that expectation of emotion. Are you going into it thinking that this is going to be something that's relaxing, and then 15 minutes later you're more aggravated than ever, and then what does that do for other elements? And then I think another larger picture is to check in with yourself about what are your goals.
Right.
And one way of thinking about this in terms of a leadership, and I know we're both really big fans of, you know, leadership development and looking at, you know, the capacity within the individual, is looking at what are those, like, quote, big rocks and little rocks. So what are those major things that you're trying to accomplish in life? And then also, what are the things that you're kind of working on day to day? And when you have a really good sense of what your priorities are, it gives you more perspective to know what you can, how much time you can spend,
sure,
exploring certain things versus others.
Yes.
And then for some people, they, you know, some people go through extra lengths to be able to filter out, you know, they filter out their news feed so that they're not seeing things that are going to be as upsetting. You know, maybe they spend more time focused on things that are going to help them relax, or, you know, having pictures of their friends, or, you know, something that's more social and enjoyable and less,
yeah,
triggering.
Yeah, exactly. One of our friends and longtime listeners and supporters, Nicole, says, I hate to say it, but I check my Facebook before I get up. And this conversation is not about making anybody feel wrong or judged or for you to judge yourself or to compare. And I'm not saying Nicole's doing that in that case, but it just triggered that in my mind. It's really, for me, the purpose of the show is to notice. Right. And that's the purpose of disrupting your automatic, is that often we are operating in this automatic way. Right. Because I've noticed how much time I spend with my phone, how much, you know, I carry it around the house with me. I carry it from room to room with me. Right. And there I have two young kids. Listen, when I was growing up, my father disconnected by watching hours and hours of TV while I sat next to him. And that's how he coped with whatever he was coping with, right? And I noticed for myself that I use the phone. I check the Facebook feed and how many likes I'm getting, or my Twitter and how many tweets I'm getting, or how many likes on my Instagram page, right? I'm checking every, you know, CNN.com, you know, the articles or Huffington Post, right? And I realize what that's doing is actually creating a separation between my kids and I. So not as a make wrong, rather as, oh, let me disrupt that because I actually want to create something different from my kids, with my kids. Let me ask this last question for you before I let you go. What would you recommend, you know, number one or two ways, best ways to disconnect from social media for the folks watching and listening?
I think one good idea, if you're concerned about what your usage is that there are apps that actually track how much you're using your phone in a day, and it'll give you a sense of what you're using, what apps you're using it for, and so just if you're kind of curious about this and you want to be able to have that sticker shock number of like, wow,
right,
I spent 2 hours on the phone today, you know, sometimes that's a good ability, you know, that people have to check in with that. I think also most important is to get a sense of what your triggers are to using social media. You know, is there something that's coming up for you that you know that that's when you're grabbing your phone and taking it out?
Right.
Are you soothing, you know, anxiety? Is there something that's getting, you know, heated that, you know, are you feeling angry and you're trying to distract yourself? And I think anytime
yes,
we make an attempt to really sideline that feeling instead of encountering it head on, and
yes,
you know, that's a real disadvantage. So if there's a time that, you know, if we're fighting with a spouse or something and then we're even more disconnected with social media, that obviously is a very different situation than, you know, it's been a long day, you're disconnecting for 5 minutes, but then there's a plan that you have of ways to get back on track together.
Yeah, one of our longtime fans, supporters of the Dudes of Disruption show, Madeline Martinez, says she focuses on family, work. This is what I do on a daily basis, you know, self-examine myself as a way to stay focused on other things. And what that reminds me of is that, what Madeline's reminding me of is that dopamine is part of who we are, right? It's released in the pleasure centers of the brain. And so find other things. So in my case, for example, the radio show, my relationship with my girlfriend, my relationship with my kids. I'm co-authoring a novel around male transformation, right? I do leadership development and culture engagement in an organization, right? Focus on those things, health, exercising. Focus on those things to help retrain your brain so that you are releasing that dopamine, which is important and critical to you. At the same time, do it for different reasons. Jessica, thank you so much for being on the show today. You've been listening to licensed psychologist, Dr. Jessica Koblenz. Jessica, how can folks get in touch with you? How can they find out more about you?
You can go to my website, which is www.astoriatherapist.com.
Awesome. Thank you so much for joining the show. Will you join the show again?
Absolutely.
Okay,
I'd love
awesome.
To. Thank you so much for having me on.
Absolutely. Have a great rest of the Sunday. Up next. All right, you're listening to Coach Nick and the Dudes of Disruption, Disrupting Your Automatics. Today's show is called Tech Break. We have a men's group, Dudes of Disruption, and Coach Nick, who's me, has a men's group here in New York City. We have a men's group session coming up. We have a couple in March. If you want to know more about our men's group, email me at coachnick@coachnick.com. I also run I'm part of a group that runs a social action group. If you want to get on the court around politics, we have an event on March 20th here in New York City at 7 p.m. Email me at coachnick@coachnick.com as well. Just a follow-up conversation, a follow-up point from the conversation with Jessica Koblenz. One of the things that my girlfriend and I do is that we have a no-technology rule in our bedroom. We have no TV in the bedroom. We keep the phones out during the night that we sleep. We use old-time alarm clocks. There's lots of studies that talk about the impact that social media and technology has on your sleep and your rest. When you have technology in the room or you're reading technology up until the moment that you're going to sleep, and that's something that I continue to focus on and work on. So that's something that we do, is no technology in the bedroom, no technology at the dinner table. I mean, think about this, folks. When you're in a meeting with somebody and you're looking down on your phone, or when you're at lunch, breakfast, or dinner, what you're wanting to intend, and that's what it actually creates. So before we get to parting shots, again, I want to remind everyone, we have a live show every Sunday, right, on WHCR, WHCR.org, or on my Facebook page here, every Sunday, 2 p.m. Eastern. We have a podcast, which is ranked number 6. It would be so cool if we can get to number 5 by next Sunday. Our podcast is on iTunes and on Podomatic. It's Dudes of Disruption. Like us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Again, I got to, you know, social media is good. If you use it in moderation, you use it as a way to complement the face-to-face conversations or the phone conversations like, you know, we're having right now, it's all good. It's all good. So here's my parting shot. My parting shot is constant stimulation of the dopamine system, which we've talked about during the show, can actually be tiring, can be exhaustive. It can actually get frustrating after a while. It can wear you out. And when you're worn out, you have less clarity and you have less creativity. And the constant switching of attention, right? You're working and all of a sudden you're going to your Twitter feed, or you're going to your Facebook feed, or you're going on LinkedIn and checking somebody out, or you're on a conference call with somebody, or on a webinar, and you're checking your emails at the same time, right? This constant switching of attention makes it hard to get anything actually accomplished. It makes it challenging to move things forward. Can you do anything to get out of this dopamine loop, this dopamine rush? Is there something you can do to prevent getting in one of these dopamine loops in the first place? Listen, if dopamine is about triggering the pleasure centers of your brain, then use dopamine to your advantage. I said at the very end of the third segment, do things that are actually healthy to you and healthy to others that will trigger the dopamine. You want dopamine to be triggered in your life. Do it with activities and engage in activities that actually are healthy to you. They're healthy to others. Engage in activities that will actually make a difference and a contribution to other people and to the world. So again, for me, I know that I'm not bringing my best version when I am on the phone, literally on the phone or on text messaging, when my 7-year-old and my 3-year-old and 11-year-old are sitting around me wanting to play. That's not my best version. My best version is when that phone is away and when my kids are present with me, right, that I spend time with them. Because by the way, when you spend time with people, when you're connected to people, you're in contribution to them, and you're also learning about yourself. The beauty of being in live conversations in person or even on the phone is there's a journey, there's an experience where you're learning about you, you're learning about them, you're learning about how to negotiate in relationships, how to actually be open and to listen generously and to just create something different. That's hard to do with technology over text messaging. So what I want to leave you with is more face-to-face time, more phone calls, live phone calls with people. Be with people in a different way. At the end of it all, we want connection. We want to have a sense of belonging. The best way to do that is face-to-face, and then use technology and social media to help enhance that, to help complement that. Again, you've been listening to Coach Nick, the Dudes of Disruption. Dr. Jessica Koblenz was on earlier. This is the Dudes of Disruption show. We're back next Sunday from 2 to 3. The podcast will drop Monday or Tuesday, Dudes of Disruption on iTunes and Podomatic. And we end every show with a quote from Dr. Seuss. Don't cry because it's over. Smile because it happened.
DMC, we have a mid-30s male found down, unresponsive, possible overdose, substance unknown, pulse is 60 and thready, respirations 8, he's intubated, and we're bagging him now. BP 90 over palpation is cool.